Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
You're listening to Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a podcast about Linux, open source and amateur radio for everyone. Now here are your hosts, Russ, K5TUX, Cheryl, W5MOO, and Bill, NE4RD.
And this is episode number 201 of Linux in the Ham Shack. You have tuned in after our 3-month hiatus, and we're going to get back down to it. And the first thing we're going to talk about is all the things that are different. And you've already heard one of those things. So we're going to talk about what else is different and what's going to kind of remain the same. There'll be a few things the same, but there's going to be a lot of difference. And hopefully it's going to be a little bit less effort for us in post-production and a lot more content for you. At least that's what we're trying for. So we're all still here, as you heard in the introduction. Cheryl sitting across from me.
I am.
Yeah, you are.
Oh, okay. Just checking.
And somewhere out in the frozen big sky country of rattling diesels is Bill, NE4RD.
Good evening, everyone.
They're thawing out there. We're freezing up here. Yay!
Yeah. Well, I think we're getting snow tonight. Tomorrow night. Today's only Monday. So, yeah, Tuesday night we're supposed to get more snow. So they're calling for anywhere from 2 to 8 inches here in town.
Oh, well, I think it's supposed to be 60 degrees here tomorrow, so...
I think that's on Wednesday, but it's supposed to be sort of edging up that way.
Yeah. Right, and then going back in the toilet
into the tank after that. Right? that snow that crosses over Montana will be down to us around Thursday, so...
Thanks, Bill.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah. We'll keep it coming.
All right, so the first thing you notice is that the intro is different. We've got a pre-programmed outro as well, which you'll hear at the end of the show. And we are also, finally, at long last... after 8 years of doing this show, or almost 10 years of doing this show, sorry, we are finally using an open source platform for doing the audio. We're using Mumble. Yay! Skype is gone. No more Skype. Unless we have to for a guest or something like that. But
yeah, it took Bill and Russ 3 months to get Mumble working, too. So.
Yeah. But so it's done.
It is done. Now. It's working now, and you're hearing it now. So there you go. And that will allow us to bring people into the Mumble chat. We'll set that up at some point where we'll have episodes where those of you who have access to Mumble can get in and be a part of it. And that should make it easier for a lot of people. And, you know, especially for our listeners who use Linux and know what Mumble is and all of that, that'd be useful. The chat room is the same. Octothorpe LHS Podcast and IRC. So that's one of the things that hasn't changed. One thing that has changed, the big thing that's changed, is our format. We are going to go from recording bi-weekly to actually recording 3 times every 2 weeks. So you may think, wow, that's weird. And it is kind of weird. But what's going to happen is the segments are going to be split in half. We're going to do basically the first part of the show 1 week, the second part of the show the second week, and then we're going to throw in all of that random stuff into a third episode. So we're going to have a short format show, which is what this one's going to be. We're going to have a long format show, which is where we pick one topic of interest to all of us and hopefully our listeners, and go forth and multiply for about 30 minutes on that topic. And then we're going to have an episode that's all the extra stuff. That's me talking about whiskey. That's Bill talking about whatever the hell he wants to talk about. Cheryl talking about food or whatever the hell she wants to talk about. And we're going to be putting those out either late Thursday or early Friday. So you can have some content to get you going for the weekend. And we're going to maybe have a contest or something, or if anyone would like to suggest a name for that sort of extra episode, because I don't know what the hell to call it. I called it like the Weekender in my notes.
No, I don't like that.
Yeah, I don't like it either. But I'm kind of drawing a blank on that. So that's important. So we will be recording every single Monday night now. Just the episodes will generally be shorter, about half the length. And another big thing we should point out is that in an effort to reduce post-production, we are going to limit the editing. Now, that doesn't mean this is going to turn into the Linux Link Tech Show where everybody just swears for 2 hours. sorry, Linux Link Tech Show guys. We love you, but. Yeah. That doesn't mean that's going to happen, but what does mean is there are probably going to be a few more ums and ahs, maybe some pauses, and maybe an occasional S word thrown in or something like that. So it's not going to be completely non-family friendly. You can still probably let your kids listen to it, but... And we are going to make a conscious effort not to just...
Not to cuss.
Not to be like that.
Yeah, we'll try to keep it like PG-13 or below.
Right, exactly. But we're not going to... I'm going to do my best to not do any editing. The idea behind that is, as soon as this episode is recorded, it's going to be released. So there won't be any backdated content. There won't be me fumbling around for a month trying to get the thing edited and put out. It'll be more content for you, just not quite as polished, which, if you listen to Gary, it doesn't matter. We're totally unpolished anyway, so we're about on the same level.
You just can't let that go, can you?
Yeah, and we got, you know, Adam, you know, always saying that we suck balls, so.
Yeah, there's that.
I've already broke the rule. Jeez.
So.
It was a quote, dang. Dang it.
That's right. That's fair use. You can use it fair use.
Yes. Oh, there you go.
All right, so that'll be good, and they'll all be coming out in the same RSS feed, so it'll just give people the opportunity to, maybe if they don't want to listen to this sort of extra stuff, they can just skip that one, but they'll still have content every single week, and we think that's important for the whole future of the show. Let's see, the Thursday Scrum we have.
Thursday Scrum, okay, well, yeah, that's better than the Weekender, so.
There's the first suggestion.
First suggestion, yeah. Right. All right, so that's that. And like I said, this is going to wind up being the short format show, which would be like the first few segments of the old show, wherein we talk about short topics and little discussions and announcements and things that are going on and stuff like that. And then the next week will be one long topic, and then we'll throw in feedback and announcements and things like that. Of course, if we have announcements anywhere, we'll just throw them in, you know, wherever they happen to be. And then the third one, of course, will be the Thursday, whatever it is. And that may have some pre-recorded content and stuff like that, but it'll all be good anyway. It'll all be good. So stay tuned for, and hopefully this will all work out. And we definitely want some feedback on the format changes. So if you think this all sucks, please let us know. And if you like it, you know, please let us know that as well. So, Bill, you want to talk about recording and release dates and stuff like that? Bill's not paying attention. Good. Stuff that's going to get left days. In because what? We're not editing now. Anyway.
I thought we were on to donations and support.
Yeah, we kind of are. I didn't mention that. Did I don't think I mentioned that we were going to still be recording at 8 p.m. I don't think I said that.
Did not.
Yeah, right. So. But the recording time on Monday is 8 p.m. will still be the same. It'll just be every Monday. So sometimes you'll catch one type of content. Sometimes you'll catch another type of content. I do plan on posting even the audio podcasts on YouTube, so you'll be able to see them there as well. And Bill has a bunch of stuff that he's been doing for YouTube as well, so there will be audio and video content on YouTube, and hopefully that will be more consistent as well. So you'll be able to follow us on YouTube if you want to do that. If you just happen to be roaming around YouTube a lot, that'll help out.
And yeah, then, so we'll be trying to move all that content that we have currently in my own channel that's specific to the podcast. I'll move that over here. And any new content we make for the show, we'll also put it there. So any more little screencasts or whatever else we do, we'll end up in there. And we'll try to populate that with more content as well, because I know more people are interested in that kind of stuff.
And I may actually, if things go well, since my computer has been upgraded and is now running a lot better, I might actually try and record the podcast, at least on my side, as a video, and then post that part of it to YouTube, because all of the content will be here. You just won't be able to see Bill or Cheryl unless I like have another camera set up, which I might do that. I might do the whole OBS thing. So, but
well,
I might
once you get that fiber installed. You know, that's going to be awesome.
Yeah, you know.
Well, we are definitely waiting for that, but it hasn't happened yet. So, and then. Yeah.
And it may never happen, knowing our phone company.
We have also set up a Patreon account so that you can sign up there instead of just going through the regular PayPal links. This will allow you to either donate via PayPal or via credit card, which is nice because a lot of people don't like using PayPal. And I would like to encourage people who are donating through PayPal right now to switch over to Patreon, because we are probably going to be having Patreon-specific content. Videos that are only available to Patreon contributors. So I would definitely suggest that if you want to continue supporting the show, with your $2 a month or your $20 a year or whatever it is, you know, do it through Patreon. That'll allow me to sort of keep better track of who is a subscriber to the show, and we'll be able to do more things for you, because trying to keep track of who's connected to the show and what people are donating through PayPal is really a nightmare. So I'm encouraging everybody to switch over to Patreon, or do both if you really want to. I mean, I'm not going to stop you for sure. Patreon will really help me out, and will of course help the show out in the same way that donating through PayPal did. So there is that. Hamvention is upcoming. We will be doing a generosity campaign to get us to Hamvention this year, 2018. Apparently there's some exciting things going on at Hamvention. They're building a new building.
Ooh.
Yeah. To get some people in there. And I don't know if that means they're going to not have tents. Maybe they will have tents and they're just building another building, so they're going to just have added capacity.
But I'm thinking the tent thing was a bad idea.
The tents are gone. Yeah, I think the tents are gone for the inside vendors. That's what they were saying on one of the shows that I was listening to. So yeah, they're going to have all the indoor vendors indoors, which will be nice. I know a lot of people were disappointed with those tents. They were very wet and everything else. You know, hopefully they'll have the tents for some other, maybe outdoor people that want a tent or something like that. Who knows? We haven't heard that. But yeah, everybody that signs up to be an indoor vendor will have an indoor space, will be actually under a normal roof.
All right. Very good. So we are going to, like I said, plan to be there. The hotel is actually already booked. Bill has already said he's coming. And we will be starting the campaign for Hamvention on February 1st. And I think we run it for 60 days usually. So keep that in mind. I wanted everybody to get all of the money that they spent on Christmas presents and things like that's like completely out of their head before they have to think about sending us a couple of bucks to get us out to Hamvention, because it is not cheap to go to Hamvention. And I don't know if we've ever talked about our expenses, but Bill and I were talking about it the other day, and we realized that if you start adding things up, it gets almost ludicrous.
Between
gas and food and booth rent and
hotel and gas and food and booth rent and everything else that's associated with being there, plus the merchandise and everything else. Yeah, it's very expensive. So, we do appreciate any help in that. And we'll talk more about that on the 1st of February when the campaign goes live. And then one other thing that's finally up is the merchandise shop. I actually have the local merchandise shop up, not using Cafe Press. There's only a few items out there right now. There's the shot glasses, pint glasses, the USB sticks, T-shirts, which we don't actually have, but you can order them on back order and we'll get some. And I think we have like one baseball cap left. But you'll be able to order those if you want some, and we'll be able to get them for you, and you'll be able to get them a whole lot cheaper than you can buy them
through Cafe Press. Yeah.
Because I'm running the store, and I've got all the merchandise already here, and I can pass it on to you and still make a little bit of profit so that we can keep the show going and you can invest a whole lot less of your money. So that's good for everybody.
Or invest more and get more stuff.
Well, there's that too.
According to the Hamvention website, I just looked this up. Last year, for those that were there, there was a furniture store or something on the property.
Yeah, I remember that.
Now been closed. That building is going to be for use by Hamvention, and they are building another building which will cover an area larger than the tents. The floor space of the new building will be an area that's covered larger than the area the tents covered last year. So there's actually going to be several more booth spaces available that are actually undercovered.
I haven't heard specifically, but I'm hoping that they free up that paved parking lot for all the handicap parking that they really didn't have a good spot for this past time. So
yeah, that would be nice.
Yeah, hopefully they open that up for our handicap hams.
And I talked to Tom W5KUB this afternoon on the air, actually, which was kind of nice. And he said, and he wanted to remind me, I guess, that they're having the Dara guys on his show tomorrow night, and they're apparently going to have another big announcement. Nothing to do with the buildings and grounds and stuff like that, I gather, but it'll be something
just
else.
Just a Hamvention type announcement.
About Hamvention. Right. So cool. I will probably try and tune into that. And I believe he records around the same time we do. I think it's around 8 o'clock on Tuesday.
You're not going to be home.
So if you can, check that out. That's Tom Medlin's show, W5KUB. You can just search for it. You'll find it. He's everywhere. So, all right, there's that. So I don't know if there was anything else we needed to touch on as far as our return to podcasting, unless someone can think of something.
We're alive.
Yep, sounds like you covered it.
Yep.
We're all here.
All right, we're here, we're live. So let's just jump back into it. This is our short format show, so we've got some amateur radio topics, some open source topics, and some Linux in the Ham Shack topics. And we'll go ahead and jump into amateur radio. And Bill's got a whopper of an amateur radio topic for the first one, which is nefarious goings-on at the ARRL. So tell us all about
it. Yeah, so while we were off on our little vacation and hiatus, you know, there was a lot of amateur radio stuff going on. But the one thing that kind of popped up was this issue with the ARRL's board transparency. And, you know, being a life member of the ARRL myself, I have to be careful how I comment on it because, you know, I don't want them to revoke my membership for giving them bad press. But I received an email from one of my club members and the Big Sky Contesters, and he kind of brought all this to my attention. I kind of heard a little bit of a little bit of noise from Twitter and so forth. I think KB6NU did a few blog posts and stuff like that, outlining concerns, and these were some of the concerns that were raised by the author of this email in my club. One of the big decisions that they kind of made over the last few weeks was the decision to significantly increase the price of the outgoing QSL service. So this is if you use, I believe, the Bureau and whatnot to send out your QSLs. That price is going up. The aborted, costly, and ultimately dysfunctional effort to pass legislation in Congress to limit the ability of a homeowner association limit amateur radio antennas. So that, of course, is the Amateur Radio Parity Act, which we all know has kind of been a boondoggle and has went through so many morphing of different permutations and stuff like that with the homeowners association, the HOA, big lobby group coming in and making their concerns known and kind of altering some of that, so you don't get a 150-foot tower in your little coveted neighborhood and stuff like that. Also, the inability of the league to mount an effective emergency response to the power outages and hurricanes destruction in Puerto Rico. I believe everybody has heard about this. There has been some good comments and some good stuff that I heard from the people that went down to Puerto Rico. I've also heard a lot of bad stuff, like a lot of disorganization, a lot of power plays and stuff like that. So, I mean, we all know there was a little bit of dysfunction. The ARRL hasn't really commented much except for, their initial PR stuff that they put out. Also, we had the people at the National Traffic System. I know a lot of people still use the NTS for passing messages, and a lot of training goes on with that. I believe that's kind of collapsing due to the ARRL neglecting it. Also, we had a questionable board of director actions. They censored its longest tenured director for events that allegedly took place at Visalia DX convention last spring. And again, you can read all this. there's a new website that covers all these issues if you haven't heard of all of these. Apparently, the board also intervened in the director election process over there to repeatedly disqualify candidates. So a lot of drama going on with that. And then the big one that most people are concerned with are all the bylaw changes within the actual documentation that, sort of like the constitution for the nonprofit organization that is the ARRL. And some of those items are granting full voting rights to the ARRL officers, including the president and various vice presidents who have not been elected by the ARRL membership, but nonetheless will have votes equal to the directors who have been elected. So these are the people that are hired to work as employees of the nonprofit. There's a change in the recall process for ARRL directors to present issues to recall to the ARRL voting membership. Only a 3-member ethics committee agrees that the reasons for the recall are valid. So check that out. It also gives the board of directors power to kick directors off the board and to suspend the membership of individuals in the ARRL, including life members like me. I believe that part has actually been in there that does require a vote and reasoning and stuff like that. So there's some verbiage change there that they're trying to make it a little easier, I suspect, to make that occur. And then, let's see, we also have the restriction of the evidence that can be presented to the board of directors to appeal a decision by the ethics committee. And the one thing I didn't put in here that I thought was interesting, too, they have a bunch of stuff for liability of the board of directors and officers, like the CEO and the CFO and stuff like that. There's a whole liability clause that, you know, doesn't hold them liable, and that the ARRL will take care of any expenses related to any litigation regarding anything that they happen to do. Let's say, like, you know, the membership puts out a class action lawsuit. You know, basically, we'd be paying for that. So a lot of interesting stuff. A lot of concerning items. Some items, I think, have been blown up with mainly opinions, like I showed, like I started at the beginning. I mean, those were concerns raised by a specific member, so that was their interpretation of what's going on. But there are a few websites out there that have some information on this. The first one I saw was the petition that was out there. We have that linked in our Etherpad, and then there's the website My ARRL Voice. You can probably Google that, and that's been out there in Twitter and everything else. And we also have a link to the changes in the bylaws. It's a Google Docs, so catch that in our Etherpad as well. And you can find all this information on that My ARRL Voice website. They did put together a really good website that kind of goes over the bits by bits and the dates and timing. But this is time-sensitive stuff. I mean, the board is voting on all these changes and everything else at their meeting in 10 days. So if you have not heard about this and, you know, and are a member, you know, it's time to maybe take a look at this. And if you have any concerns, please send an email to your director and make your concerns known. And if you're not a member, you know, this is an organization that represents ham radio to the FCC and to the government and everywhere else. So, you know, even if you say, well, I'm going to boycott them, I'm not going to join the ARRL. I mean, this affects you. It affects everybody that is a ham radio operator. So even though they only represent like 23% of the amateur radio population in the U.S., it's important that you understand that this organization is like the one lobbying group in the government, you know, that has access to the government at the level in which they can affect, you know, changes in the FCC, changes in our spectrum and everything else. So whether you like them, hate them, or whatever, it's important that we keep an organization that actually will do good things for the ham radio community. So we need to keep them on that track because that's the purpose of the ARRL.
Yep, absolutely. And I hadn't really had a chance to look at all of the things that have been going on in there. I know you've been following it pretty closely, but just reading through this list and listening to you talk about it, it's pretty interesting. And I didn't realize that the Ham Radio Parity Act had kind of fallen through, or I guess was sort of ineptly handled, I guess, is what I got from that.
Well, yeah, they've just been, you know, it kind of fell apart in the last session, and I think they're trying to start it again this session, but, you know, in the last session, it kind of got neutered down so much by the HOAs that a lot of people were concerned that it's basically a moot point at this stage. So I'm not sure where that's going. I haven't followed to see if it's been reintroduced this session yet or not, and I haven't seen who the sponsors are. But, a lot of people aren't happy with the way that was handled last session. And, we need to make sure that that if it does go through, it has the right protections for amateurs to operate their radios in their neighborhoods.
All right. Very good. I'm sure we'll be talking about the ARRL some more, but people should be focused on the ARRL a little bit, especially as ham radio operators or even potential ham radio operators. And even if you aren't a member of the club, it's probably worthwhile keeping track of sort of what's going on in the organization, because they do represent ham radio operators in the government, and that's a big thing that they do. And it's important because the FCC regulates what we do, and they are our voice in there. So it's important.
Yeah, yeah. So why don't you go ahead and go over your amateur radio updates, and I can light my cigar again, and then I'll talk about mine.
Yeah, that's the one thing about those. It's like you keep talking and then they go out, but that's all right. I'll give you just enough time to do that probably, because my ham radio updates are pretty minimal. I did rebuild my entire Shack computer. I had some issues with package inconsistency on the machine, and I don't remember how I got to that state, but it was so bad that I decided that I must reinstall the system, which I went ahead and did. So I went with the Debian regular version 9.3, which is Stretch, the current stable version. I just installed that, and then I installed the Ham Radio Dash Star packages to essentially give me the Debian Ham Radio Pure Blend, and then all of the packages that I use normally on top of that. And I've been using it. As soon as I got it done, I tested it on the various modes. I actually used it on FreeDV, although getting any kind of traction in FreeDV is very difficult. The tracker, where you actually go and find out if there's anybody using FreeDV currently, it's called qso.freedv.org. That was down for a while. It's back up now. But there are very few people actually using FreeDV right now, and maybe we need to get in touch with Dave down there in Australia and see like what the state of FreeDV is right now, because I'd be curious, because it's trying to make a contact on there is almost impossible anymore.
I haven't tried it in a while.
Yeah, no one's really using it at the moment, at least not that I can tell.
They're all in FT8 land.
I guess so. FT8 is like sweeping the world. And I did upgrade to the latest version of WSJTX so I could have access to FT8. And I did some work on there because, I mean, and since they fixed the auto sequencing, so FT8 works really well, and they've shortened the time cycle. So making contacts in FT8 is very quick and very efficient. And it's kind of taking the ham radio world by storm. So if you want to check out a cool digital mode, definitely look at FT8, get your WSJTX up and running and check that out. Of course, I was using FLDigi as well, because that's sort of my go-to to start up. First thing I do when I get on my box is install and run FLDigi and check out like PSK31 on 20 meters, because that way I know everything is working, because you can pretty much always find something. And just tested, made sure everything was working. I got the rig over here, and I was on today. Tom, W5KUB, like I said, I talked to him earlier. He posted on Facebook and his group that he was going to just be out on 7187 and hanging out and chatting with people. So I jumped on and talked to him. We had a good little conversation. So I have been on the air a little bit, but not as much as I would like. I've actually spent my whole day kind of cleaning up my shack here, and I'm almost done.
Still work that needs done.
There is still work, but it's much further along than it was yesterday.
Yes. So.
But that's really all I've been doing. I've been focused on trying to get the show put back together, and getting with Bill and Cheryl and kind of retooling everything and focusing on work and all the other parts of my life. So ham radio has kind of taken a little bit of a back burner, but that's where I am now. And now that we're recording the show again, I hope to get to jump right back into it. All right, Bill, so what have you been doing?
I've been busy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought my hijacking the program for amateur radio scouting has been bad. I've gotten myself a bit deeper in the pile. The K2BSA had their biannual elections over the early winter months, November and December. And now I'm currently the vice president of the K2BSA. So along with Jim Wilson, K5ND, which I think we've had him on here before. If not, everybody's seen him on all the other shows talking about Jamboree on the air. He's remaining the president. Donald Sunfeld, KD2FIL, he'll be remaining the secretary. And Mike Crownover, AD5A, is joining us, joining me, especially as a newbie here in the K2BSA management, per se, and will become the treasurer of the group. We haven't set many priorities for the upcoming two-year term, but I can tell you we're going to be busy. We're going to be focused on Jamboree on the Air for 2018 and 2019. Try to hit that hard and heavy and see if we can bring those numbers up a little bit more of people reporting in. And then we're also planning on the big World Scout Jamboree that's coming to North America here in 2019. And that will be at the summit in West Virginia again. And we'll be operating most likely as NA1WJ, North America 1 World Jamboree. So that'll be the call sign so far for the World Jamboree. And we're real excited about that coming up here in 2 years. My Ubuntu system has been on YouTube. I finally went through and did that shortly after we finished up the show series back in October. And got quite a few views on it. We got about 621 views through those six videos. And then I had a quick follow-up video on FT8 that I did that was viewed about 567 times. So a lot of people are interested in FT8. Although I didn't think I covered it very well, but I did what I could. I'm going to try to continue to go into a bit more detail on it. I had planned on doing a video on PAT. That's that WinLink client that we talked about about 15 episodes or 10 episodes ago. But I haven't got back to that. So I'm going to try to get on that and get my WinLink all set up with that. I had talked about doing that Mac OS and the Ham Shack video series, and it was I'd started it. It was all going well until I began interfacing with the Yaesu SCU-17, which is kind of like the rig interface / SignalLink all in one box. And the Mac just did not like that very much. It kept cutting out after the very first transmit cycle, so that wasn't very useful. So it's basically great for rig control, and that's about it. I then tried switching to my SignalLink and IC703 setup, and for some reason, Rumlog thinks that the IC703 needs to be in some sort of data mode for FT8 and all those other PSK modes and stuff like that. And of course, it doesn't have a data mode, so I'm not sure where that's coming from. The 703 has been around for probably a lot longer than Rumlog, so my rig was never really happy with that either. So I probably won't be doing that at all, and I won't be messing around with the Mac except for just as a toy, which is what it's always been anyway. So that's where my Mac is sitting at. And of course, my antenna woes, they continue to vex me out here in the yard. Now we just got done with about 14 inches of snow in the backyard. It's finally starting to melt. We're down to maybe about 5 to 6 inches left in the backyard, and I haven't been able to get out there to really tinker with the antenna, so I'm still on all my portable antennas, so one band at a time. And, it'll be that way probably for at least the next few 3 to 4 weeks, depending upon any more snowfall that we have here in the forecast.
All right. Well, you need to work on those antennas. I need to work on mine. I've got one leg of it that's hanging a little bit low, and it's probably getting all kinds of RF craziness off the metal roof that it's sitting over. But I was still able to talk to Tom on 40 meters today, so I guess it's not working like too bad. Of course, he's only in Memphis, and I'm here in Southwest Missouri. So my 100 watts apparently didn't have too much trouble getting through the atmosphere down into Tennessee. But... Yeah, so you need to get on there so we can, like, rag chew on the air sometime instead of, all these computers and stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so Cheryl, what have you been doing for the last 3 months?
Sleeping.
All of it?
Yep, all of it.
Have you at least got on, like, a repeater or something?
No.
Nope.
I have not touched... No, Russ doesn't let me touch your stuff,
What the hell are you talking about? There's... All this stuff is sitting over here. If you want to get on a repeater, you go ahead and do that. Although, I have my 2-meter/440 antenna sitting in the bag that I bought it in at the Hamfest.
Hamvention.
No, it wasn't. Oh, yeah, at Hamvention.
It was
2 years ago.
Yeah, 2 years ago, sitting beside me.
Yeah, it's still sitting in the package. So, one of these days, I'm going to get that up on the roof, and then maybe we can do some VHF work. So, there you go. There's a little bit more of an update.
Yeah, there you go.
All right.
Whatever.
So maybe by the next time we record, which will be next Monday, we can have Cheryl making her first contact.
Sure.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
Whatever.
All right. So anyway, let's move on. We've got some open source topics to talk about. And the first one is, we need open source CPUs. And this is in response to the catastrophe that is the Spectre and the other one I can never remember.
Meltdown,
that's it. Spectre and Meltdown vulnerabilities that are affecting CPUs. And this is...
all your CPU belong to us.
Exactly.
Funny, we had that discussion yesterday, and I don't even remember what it was about. your instructions for your soldering iron. So, you said they were in Chinese or something. I said, so does it say anything about all your bases are belong to us?
No, apparently I missed that. But anyway, yeah, we can talk about the soldering iron some other time. I got a butane soldering iron. That was an experience. Anyway,
the house is still standing.
It
so
is
we're
still
good.
Standing. That's right. So the thing about open source CPUs, and this comes from a lot of different sources, but I found ZDNet's article on it, and the link to it, of course, will be in the show notes. But this latest vulnerability is affecting hardware, and that's a huge problem because the mitigation for the problem is in software, and the basic outcome of that is that your applications and your computer in general will be running much slower because you're having to mitigate a hardware problem with software. And anytime you have to come out of the hardware stack, everything runs very, very slowly. So all of these...
Well, I think that might be a little overblown. They've been throwing around arbitrary numbers that nobody has really been able to validate or verify. So I would hold judgment on exactly how much of a performance loss that most users would see. I would think... But the type of problem this exists in, you're not going to notice an issue on a typical, you know, top computer. It'd be more along the lines of high performance computing, where they're doing serialized tasks and stuff that requires a lot of iterations. Those kind of operations would tend to fall into this category more so than typical use.
And it does state in most of the articles that a typical desktop user will probably not notice a huge performance hit, but from the server perspective, it's definitely in there, and the exploits are based on predictive analysis in CPUs or predictive computing, which is part of the problem. But the whole idea behind this article was that we really need to, if reasonably possible, sort of abandon the i386 and the AMD 64, the Intel chipset, in favor of an open source hardware platform or an open source hardware CPU, so that these kind of problems can be mitigated when they show up. I mean, if you have, you know, because the Intel chipset is basically closed source, you know, and these problems have been around apparently for a long time. They just really haven't been executed. And it is probably worth noting that you do have to have local access to a machine to exploit these particular vulnerabilities. But I thought the article was interesting, and I do believe it would be nice to have a shift into an open source CPU platform, something that we could use. And because the kernels in the Linux world, at least, have become so modularized and so expansive, and the way that the coding is being done now, moving to a different architecture would be very, very trivial. And that's a good thing for us. And we just need to get some people focused on doing some hardware work and making a CPU. Because apparently the ARM chipset is not necessarily affected by these vulnerabilities, but they have licensed some of Intel's technologies, which could make some of them vulnerable if they use that technology. So it's kind of a widespread problem and needs to be approached. And I think a good way to do that might be to look at an entirely different chipset. So if you want to find out more about that, there's lots of articles on the internet about it. The one that I found on ZDNet will be in the show notes.
Yeah, exactly. And as Don's pointing out in the chat room, you know, people that use virtualized platforms like VMware or AWS or any of those, shared memory space and stuff like that, servers, you know, they're a little bit more exposed to attacks basically by their, you know, sharing partners on the same systems and stuff, because they do share the same memory space. So some of these bugs are specific to a memory addressability.
Yeah, absolutely. And I did read a few articles that talk about the fact, and this is a little bit high level, so for the rest of you can ignore this, but it does allow some exploits in the CPU to attack user space, which is usually segmented from kernel space. But apparently some of the exploits can actually break through that barrier, and that's a real problem, because there's a lot of sensitive data that's exposed in user space that the kernel should not be able to touch, but sometimes can. Wow, that's a lot of pasting in the chat room there, Don.
Don's pasting in there.
I know, he's going paste crazy.
Yes. So, yeah, just be mindful. Things will be changing. The patch Tuesday is coming out tomorrow for most Windows machines. I'm sure the big vendors like AWS and stuff like that have already begun patching with, I believe they got it last week, possibly. So if you notice your AWS loads changing, that's probably why.
All right. Yeah, just keep – it's not like it isn't being beaten into everyone. It's everywhere on the internet right now.
Yeah. But, so there's plenty of information out there, but just be mindful that not all of it applies to a desktop user. So
absolutely. Although I did see, I think, Google released patches for Chromebook on it. So
yeah. Well, it's a shared platform, so same kind of thing, yeah.
All right, so there's another thing in the open source world that I noticed, and that was that Lindows has been resurrected. This is a project that died.
It died quite a long time ago,
but it's actually been split into two entities now. It's now become FreeSpire, and the original version of Linspire is now the commercial version of Lindows. And
yes, because they can't call it Lindows.
Right. But if you want to have a commercial version of Linux, which I'm not sure you would, although there's lots of people out there using Red Hat, so apparently someone wants it. But there's a free version called FreeSpire. Version 3 point something of it has been released recently, and I'm going to go ahead and take a look at this because I'm curious. And it has been such a long time since I've seen Lindows even mentioned, because I think the project died like in 2010 or something. It's been gone a long, long time.
It's been a while, yeah. Yeah.
So this could be interesting, and it might be worth a quick look, maybe a little bit of a review, and maybe a Linux in the Ham Shack readiness score, or if it turns out to be more interesting than it seems on its surface, then maybe we can broach it in a long format topic, but we'll see how that goes. But if you want to check it out, the links to both the commercial and the free versions will be in the show notes. And so if you want to revisit Lindows, which is now called Linspire and FreeSpire, you can go ahead and check that out. And Bill, I'm sure, is saying, no, don't. But maybe it's good now. How do you know? You know?
Yeah, you never know.
All right, and moving on to our final segment, Linux in the Ham Shack. For this time around, we have a couple of things. The first one is an Android app called SDR Touch, which you can use to convert your mobile device into an SDR receiver. Now, it requires an actual SDR receiver, so it's only the front-end part of it. It uses RTL SDRs, though, so you can buy those for really cheap. You can get the normal RTL SDRs or anything that would be along those lines, $10 to $15, I think, in most places. And then it also requires some way for you to plug your RTL SDR into your Android device, which may or may not require a USB OTG cable or an on-the-go cable. Those are relatively inexpensive as well. You can find them at all your major online retailers. You get this set up, you plug those things into your phone or your tablet or whatever, and then you run SDR Touch, and you can have a full-blown SDR receiver. Now, I don't know if it does any kind of frequency, what's the word I'm looking for? Up converting. Yeah, up converting. That's what I'm looking for. Up converting. I'm assuming it doesn't, so you're only limited to what your RTL SDR can do, which means if
you're using... that's what it is. I mean, I actually installed this on my phone, and I have an on-the-go adapter and an RTL SDR, an older donger, like one of those DVB-T dongles that does, VHF and up. And, I tuned into, an FM station here, and it worked. I was surprised. It's a demo version that you can get through the Play Store. I believe if you pay extra, you can get all the other features like Spectrum and stuff like that. You can try that out. And I did put a link in the show notes to a Google photo of me with the Spectrum on for the few minutes that you could have it on for demo purposes. But, in general, it works. I mean, you can it has all the modes, so you can flip to AM if you want to listen to Airband. Or SSB, USB, LSB for the satellites and stuff. So it's interesting to have it on the phone. I'm not sure I would ever use it, but I mean, I'm sure there's people that are playing with these things that are using a mobile, and this might be something interesting for people using their RTL SDR for a downlink for satellite work, which is it does make it kind of interesting.
Yep, absolutely. And a lot of people have a lot of Android tablets maybe just lying around or something like that. So if you happen to have the hardware, you can connect up to it. You can just make yourself a quick and dirty SDR receiver out of your Android device for little to no money. So, there's something in that too, because SDR can be expensive. Looking at you, Flex Radio. Anyway, so moving on, we got one more thing. And this was something I found out about earlier today. It's MHUXD, which is a daemon that runs on Linux, and it's Linux only in this case. It's GPL v2. It was written by Delta Juliet 5 Quebec Victor out of Germany. And what it is kind of like a ham lib, but it's for micro ham devices. And it will allow you to interface with any of the microham devices that are currently available. And it will create like the virtual devices, the sudo TTYs and everything that give access to a Linux system so that you can connect it to your cat system or something like that. And it gives you a GUI overlay for configuring those devices and creates the necessary interface on your Linux system so that you can then create the rig control and whatnot with that. Plus, it also says something about on the MicroKeyer 2, you can configure the onboard display of the MicroKeyer 2. Now, I haven't actually looked at the hardware on that, so I'm not sure what that feature really does. But I looked at the interface, and it uses a specific graphic user interface suite, which I can't remember the name of. It's called like Clear Silver or Silver Clear or something like that, that makes it look like the configuration for a lot of like home DSL modems. So if you've ever like gotten into your DSL modem or router at home or something like that, the interface that is the configuration GUI for MHUXD looks a lot like that. But it's pretty straightforward and easy to use. So if you have one of these MicroHam devices, this might be something for you to look at. And it is open source. It is GPL V2. And it's freely available to you, written by that German ham, DJ5QV. So if this is something that you can use, go ahead and check that out.
Yeah, it looks like he's got a PPA and everything else. So you can just install it as a PPA and then apt-get install the actual app. So make it easy.
All right. Easy peasy. Well, I guess we're not going to go there. Anyway, trying to keep this show PG-13. Anyway, so we're down to the end, and that means Cheryl can tell us about what she does when she's not asleep, which is read the social media roundup.
I do that? Oh, okay.
Well, generally speaking, you do.
Anyway. I didn't know if that was a change or not.
Nope. So there you go.
All right. So,
and it's a long one, by the way, so everybody strap in.
You think? It's been 3 months of coming, yep. So... So, all right, everybody, strap up and hang on here. So, for our subscriptions this time, we have Johnny Kinsey, Stephen Harp, Robert Pitts, John Clark, Dylan Engel, Bill Pioter, Charlie Brown, Donald Gover, Jeremy Hall, Brian Smith, Ronald Eike, Darren King, John Fochke, Michael Jacobs, Todd Bowers, Paul Griffith, Jonas Rulo, Christopher Weaver, Doug Redder, Michael Connolly, Robert Doherty, Alan Wilson, Kevin Murray, Steven Sainer, Michael Aiello, Robert Halliday, Robert Yerke, James Blocker, Wayne Carpenter, and Thor Wiegman. For Facebook, we have Misha LeBlanc, Colby McKinney, Adam Kimbrew, and Sean Cunningham. For Google+, we have Drawer Kobe and Jay Bird. For Twitter, this is a long list. ArmyDad451, Ham_Garlic, KDAVEC, Sit All Day Long, Field Radio Pod, George Harold Nepp, S. Pittistrov, VE2, EGBERG Philip. Okay, I'm sorry if I'm massacring any of these. D. Cummings, KG7DRO, at Jake Boaz, at Bromi Drive, RockTech33, KA5KVF, KD4WOV, K7UHN, RL Stoner,
G7UHN,
G7UHN, RL Stoner, Kimbrew Ski, Mickey140, 7Z1AL, Doug Boff J62, Radio Car Signs, Lightfighter_SC, Scanner_School, Step and Jump 1, K Macy 1966, Silithar L I H A B I P, Croc OSMIA 007, and Skunk Ham. Again, sorry if I massacred anybody's Twitter. For YouTube, we have Ryan Kingsbury, Don Biederman, Carlin Cagle, Tom Kane, and Dave Thurston. And on our mailing list, we have Rick Bennett, Adam Kimbrew, Mike Darrell, Larry Jones, Michael Combs, Scott Mays, Russell Mays, Dwight Myers, and Raymond Van Sickle in the Renault merchandise sales.
All right, there we go. That's what we get after being away for 3 months. So we're down to the end of it. That's the end of this show, episode number 201. And the way the outros work now, everything is already done and I don't have to speak and no one else has to talk over the intros. So, you know, this will get smoother as time goes on, but I'm going to be ready to kick the intro off here in a second. But if anybody has any final words they want to say, or if anyone wants to comment on the chat room before we get to the intro, now is the time to do it for sure. And if we don't have that, then I guess we'll all bid you adieu and I'll kick off the outro. And we'll end 201. It's been a long time coming. So Anybody have anything they want to comment before we run out of here?
No, just want to wish everybody Happy New Year, and hopefully this will be a great 10th year of the podcast.
Yes.
Yep, absolutely. Almost 10 years running. It'll be 10 in October, but we're getting there close. So. Yes.
Yeah, the way the years zip by anymore. Yeah. October will be here next week, I'm sure. So.
All right. Exactly.
Happy New Year, everyone, and 7-3 for everybody, and we'll see you all next time around in a week from now. Take care.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a community-sponsored podcast. Our website is located at lhspodcast.info. You can support the program by visiting the LHS Patreon page of patreon.com/LHSpodcast or using the contribute link on the website. Get in touch via social media. The show has a presence on Google+, Facebook, Twitter, Discord, and YouTube. Or you can drop an email to info@lhspodcast.info or record a voicemail at 1-909-LHS-SHOW. That's 1-909-547-7469. Visit the IRC channel, LHS Podcast, on the Freenode IRC network. Also visit the online merchandise store at shop.lhspodcast.info for fun and fashionable LHS merchandise. Become an ambassador and represent LHS at a Linux convention or hamfest. Email ambassadors@lhspodcast.info or visit the website for details. The podcast is recorded live every Monday night at 8 o'clock p.m. Central Time. Connect to the stream at stream.blacksparrowmedia.net/8008/LHS live. Until next time, over and out. Linux in the Ham Shack and the Linux in the Ham Shack logo are released under a Creative Commons Attribute Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License.